What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is U.S. Senator John McCain of Arizona. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Too Jewish Maven on Israel, Oshrat Borel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. You know, you would think that as the school year winds down, which means the most active phase of the synagogue year winds down too, we'd begin to have less to do and our lives would calm down with the coming of summer. But that's just not how it works. Instead, this month we're treated to a seemingly endless parade of annual meetings, school concerts and plays, award ceremonies, graduations, commencements, special programs, fundraising events, and more. It's a nonstop orgy of manufactured celebrations designed to commemorate some real events and to push us to purchase gifts and cards for a whole bunch of created milestones as well. No offense out there to those who are graduating from something real, becoming doctors, lawyers, rabbis, and such. There are some events we commemorate this month that really matter. But I'm struck by the urge to create annual gigs for every organization and group, the need to have a ritual to confirm each one's importance and alleged accomplishments. Each of these annual meeting celebrations are pretty much identical, and none actually commemorate anything truly meaningful. So why do we need them? After all, in the Jewish calendar, we have a plethora of real holidays that celebrate not our petty human accomplishments. Look, another annual meeting. Oh boy! But instead, God's manifold gifts that give us life, purpose, and meaning. Is it more important to give someone the annual award for doing the ordinary work of whatever it is some organization does to celebrate our very ordinary accomplishments? Or is it of greater meaning to remember our Creator, who made this magnificent universe and this beautiful world that we have, and who made us and gives us the privilege of being alive? In this period, when we count the Omer each and every day between Pesach and Shavuot, perhaps we could take a moment, between rushing from event to event, to remember all that is good comes from God, not from whatever organization chooses to celebrate itself yet again. And by the way, on the theme of ersatz holidays, it's Mother's Day today, a hallmark holiday if ever one existed. The history of it is complex. You probably don't know it. I didn't. Mother's Day was created and promoted by a woman named Anna Jarvis after the death of her own mother in 1905, and she held the first one in Ohio in 1908. It was based on her own mother's efforts during and after the Civil War to create groups of mothers from both sides to heal the wounds of the nation and work for peace. Indeed, pacifism was a key part of Mother's Day, since mothers are the ones who see the children to whom they have given birth killed in wars started by men. The first editions of Mother's Day were serious affairs. You went home or to church with your mom and spent time with her, thanking her for giving you life. This being America, of course, it soon developed you could make a lot of money on Mother's Day. Card companies, florists, and confection manufacturers did and do. The average American will spend $160 on his or her mom this year. No kidding. Anna Jarvis, who got the whole thing going, was extremely opposed to the commercialization of her invention of Mother's Day, which was originally dedicated to pacifism and the effort to lower infant mortality. Ironically, this peace-loving day became an official American holiday in 1914, just months before the beginning of World War I, when President Woodrow Wilson made it the second Sunday in May, 102 years ago. Anna Jarvis, a woman of means, worked hard and even radically to stop the galloping commercialization of Mother's Day. She spent her considerable inheritance fighting candy companies and flower consortiums and Hallmark to try to stop it becoming what it is now. Jarvis failed, and we buy cards and flowers and take Mom to brunch and get her candy, none of which has much to do with the original purpose of the day. Nonetheless, the idea of honoring your mother is a good one. In last week's Torah portion of Kedoshim, it said, honor your mother and your father in that order. And as a Jewish show, we should follow the Torah, right? So in honor of all you moms out there, thanks, Mom, here's a play-in from our friends, Les Unoirs, their jazzy version of the classic Yiddish song, A Yiddishe Mame. Jewish mother is the best in the world, a gift from God, says the song. Happy Mother's Day to my mom and all the moms out there listening. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is longtime U.S. Senator John McCain, Republican nominee for president in 2008, one of the important voices in American politics for 30 years. Senator McCain is a Vietnam War hero, elected to the House of Representatives in 1982 and to the U.S. Senate in 1986. As chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee and a longtime active member of the Committee on Foreign Relations, Senator McCain is a historic figure and has unique perspective on the Middle East, immigration, the current presidential election, and Israel. Meet John McCain when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning, the distinguished Senator John McCain of Arizona. I don't think you actually need any introduction here. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi. I'm reminded of Mr. Henry Kissinger was once being introduced at a gathering, and a guy said he's a man who needs no introduction, and Henry Kissinger said no, but he enjoys it. So thank you. Thank you, Rabbi.
My pleasure. Tell us how you first became interested in Israel and how important you think Israel is to the United States right now.
Well, I became interested as a member of the military and being involved in issues. And particularly when I came back from prison, I attended the National Defense University and did a lot of studying about the Middle East and also my faith. I am committed to the Christian religion, and I understand the importance of the state of Israel in our history and in our lives, and as a fundamental of my faith. So a combination of all that, and finally, the world, the Middle East, is in more turmoil than it's ever been since, certainly, since as far as Israel is concerned, maybe since 47, and there are more threats to Israel than there have been any time since then, and more diverse threats. And so as this administration's policies have failed in the Middle East, the threats to Israel, the existential threats, have increased, particularly from Iran.
You chair the Senate Armed Services Committee on the Foreign Relations Committee. Tell us about the relationship. We talk about a special relationship with Britain. Is there a closer ally of the United States than Israel right now?
There is not been a closer relationship. I would say the closest to that was probably the United States relationship with the British. But I'd also point out, as far as the presidents of the United States are concerned, it's never been worse with this president and the state of Israel. And unfortunately, this president has gotten personal in his dislike or disrespect of the prime minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu. And so they are at a very low point. And the president has made very pointed remarks about Israel, and we all know that the relationship is very unfortunate, because, as I'm sure you and I would agree, Rabbi, that the Middle East is beset by more challenges than ever before. So I would argue that certainly in recent history, there has never been a greater need for more coordination. Now, I'm happy that we funded Iron Dome for Israel. I'm very happy with a lot of the aid and assistance that we provide and the relationship. But it has certainly been strained by the president's disdain and his seemingly endless quest for a relationship with Iran that is not possible as long as the Iranians are committed to the destruction of the state of Israel. I know you know about the two missiles that were tested by Iran. Written in Hebrew on the side of both of those missiles was the words "death to Israel." So that is a very unfortunate aspect of our relationship with Israel. I'm hoping the next president of the United States, whoever that is, will try to repair that relationship.
We will talk much more about that and other subjects with Senator John McCain in just a moment. We return on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Rabbi.
Quitting smoking, big part of your lives.
Yeah, it's very important. When we started this company just over 6 years ago, it was because I had a really bad cigar habit, and it was time for me to quit. We have 7 children. Our youngest just turned 8, and I wish to be around to watch them all grow up and have successful careers and family of their own.
And Pamela, it's better personally, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. I'm a non-smoker, and being with a person who smokes cigars in particular, it's much nicer. His body doesn't reek of it, his hair does not reek of it, his clothes do not smell of it, and there's no tobacco between his teeth anymore.
And you don't have to send him for extra showers or out in the rain.
No extra showers.
How can people find out more about Freedom Smoke?
You can look us up on our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call us on our toll-free number, 1-800-705-7013. That's 800-705-7013.
Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Thank
Rabbi.
You.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akfel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, stream them from there, or download them from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We have 6 months until we elect a new president of the United States. We continue our election year feature, the 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report. Contradicting his earlier position of neutrality between Israel and the Palestinians, Republican candidate Donald Trump advocated for the continued building of Israeli settlements in the West Bank last week. Trump refuted the notion that halted expansion of Jewish settlements is a prerequisite for peace negotiations and rejected any halt in new construction. He asserted Israel must continue to move forward with building projects, a position that directly contradicts the Obama administration's position as well as the Palestinian peace negotiating apparatus. Thousands of missiles are being launched into Israel. Who would put up with that? Who would stand for it? Trump said. I'd love to negotiate peace, but I mean a lasting peace, not a peace that lasts for 2 weeks and they start launching missiles again. In the past, Trump has maintained neutrality on the conflict. He argued it would afford him the ability to close the deal of all deals that would culminate in a two-state solution. Trump's new stance on settlement construction comes after former Secretary of State and Democratic presidential contender Hillary Clinton accused Trump of neutrality at the AIPAC annual policy conference in March. America can't ever be neutral when it comes to Israel's security or survival, Hillary Clinton said. Some things aren't negotiable. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
The concept of diaspora simply means Jews outside of Israel. We're not the only people in history who've had a diaspora. Ours just has gone on for a very long time. And there's a lot of questions about what the future of the Jewish diaspora will be now that there's a real state of Israel and it's getting older and larger in population. You know, it's an interest. The whole concept of it is a little odd when you think about it.
Right. So not to be a nitpicker, but the concept of diaspora doesn't only mean Jews outside of Israel. It's actually from a Greek word meaning dispersion. And I think a lot of people in history, for different reasons, have been dispersed. And there are communities scattered around the world, literally scattered. And it might be interesting for your listeners to hear us explore the notion of, so how is the Jewish diaspora similar? How is it different from other diasporas? Can we draw any lessons from the history of other diasporas? Can we make any valid inferences about the future of the Jewish diaspora? I mean, these are all questions that I think are interesting and pertinent today because, as you said, Israel in many ways is growing stronger and attracting more immigrants, and the diaspora communities are less in number than they used to be, probably less spread out geographically than they used to be, and many diaspora communities are on the verge of disappearing. I mean, once you go under a critical mass in a certain town or a certain country, there's nobody left to get married or produce children or to have bar mitzvahs, and the Jewish community in that particular town or country, or even in some cases whole region, disappears. Either it dies or it moves to places where there are more Jews, which might be New York or Montreal or Paris or Israel. But if it's all right with you, I'd like to start, because I think many of your listeners are at least familiar with the concept of the Jewish diaspora, like who are the other diasporas and what created them and how did they start differently or similarly to the Jewish diaspora?
And then what do they have to teach us? I think maybe it'd be worthwhile just defining terms. Diaspora simply means people that are spread out from some country of origin somewhere else. And I don't know that it needs to be any more specific than that.
Right. And so, I mean, let's take the case, let's posit, I'm not sure this is exactly right, but let's posit that the Jewish diaspora is the oldest one of all these diasporas. May or may not be right, but
And if so, it goes back to the destruction of the first temple, you know, 2,000, nearly 600 years ago.
Right, 586 BCE.
Right.
So Jews were basically expelled from the land of Israel by their new rulers. And they were driven eastward to what was then Persia and Babylonia and what is now Iran and Iraq. And they formed the roots of some of the oldest Jewish communities that still exist outside the land of Israel. And that was really the first dispersion and the beginning of the concept of diaspora Jewry. And as most of your listeners know, the Jews who remained in Iraq produced eventually the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, which is the authoritative code of law that guides Orthodox Jewish lives even today.
So that's a great beginning, and we'll come back and explore other diasporas and maybe make some conclusions about the Jewish diaspora in the coming weeks. Thanks so much, Tom.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivi Non, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Wine Tribe, Israel Center, Boker Tov Oshrat, and Happy Imas Day, Happy Mother's Day.
Yom Ha'em Sameach.
Yom Ha'em Sameach. Mother's Day, is Mother's Day a big deal in Israel?
It used to be February 14th, which is
Saint Valentine's Day.
But when I was a kid, it was Yom Ha'em. It was Mother's Day. And, you know, we buy something like here.
Flowers or candy
or something. And yeah, like here. But then I think 20 years ago, and I want to find the person who changed it, to the family day. So no more Yom Ha'em.
So Yom HaMishpacha.
Yom HaMishpacha.
Ah.
Yeah. So no more.
What a ripoff. So you don't get presents?
Never had Yom Ha'av. You know what we say in Israel? When is Yom Ha'av?
What, the Father's Day? Every
Tisha
day?
B'Av.
Tisha B'Av. So, the great day of mourning is Father's Day. That's very funny.
So
we hope. So there never was a Father's Day because you don't have Hallmark selling greeting cards there.
B'Diuk. And we don't have Boss Day, and we don't have
Secretary's Day. And Executive Assistant Day.
Yeah.
So let's talk about
which all are important, of course.
Of course. Especially if you're selling cards. So let's talk about some really important things that are coming up in honor of Yom HaTzma'ut, the coming of Israel Independence Day.
So actually later today, I will pick up four chefs from our partnership region.
So four Israeli chefs are coming here.
Four Israeli celebrity chefs that I'm so proud and happy that we can find, like four chefs from our partnership region that have their own catering restaurants, well-known, won prizes, national and international. It's a way to bring like good food, which everyone love.
Everybody, especially
Jews.
Definitely. Especially Jews.
Yes. Israeli Jews, yeah. But also to bring the sense of partnership, the partnership that we have for 20 years between Tucson, Kiryat Malachi, and Chof Ashkelon, and it grow and it involved a lot of kids. Now we have the school twinning and other programs. So it's really like a great timing to bring. By the way, one of the chefs has a kid that is part of the school twinning from the Israeli side. So
wow.
And she will go and visit the kindergarten. So it's
great.
Great. It's all this living bridge that we are building. So we have few.
So how can people taste their food?
Okay, so on Thursday, first of all, we have some workshops and people already bought tickets to the workshops. But events at the JCC on Thursday, we have 12 torches ceremony. We are honoring 13 people. They will lit 12 torches. These people did extraordinary things to connect Tucson and Israel, and we are honoring them for that. And we will serve a fancy dinner. It's $36 per person and $68 for couple because it's 68 years for Israel. And on Sunday, we will have another fancy dinner. Kosher food also available upon RSVP. It's all kosher style for sure. You can buy tickets at JewishTucson.org.
And find out all about it. Well, sounds delicious. I have to have some of each of their foods. Toda rabba and Yom Em Sameach.
Toda.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, the head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Or, Rabbi.
So we've been talking about this archetype from the Passover Seder now a couple weeks past.
Right.
the question of the four children and the different learning types, mm-hmm. even maybe the different intelligences they present. Mm-hmm. The last of those is the category of the She'eno Yodea Lishol, the child who doesn't know how to ask.
You know, and this is an exciting child because there's this idea of the tabula rasa, right? The blank slate. And so many of us don't know the questions to ask in so many facets of life and the world and life experiences. It's true for adults and it's true for children as well. So as these kids come in, kind of raw material, open, primed, ready, it's our job to give them the tools to know how to ask those questions. And so we have this opportunity to provide a framework, to provide basic knowledge and information, and also to help them learn that asking questions is important. And there's a value to understanding and to be assertive and to kind of stand up and say, I don't know about that. Help me learn.
You know, the Nobel Prize winning physicist, Isaac Rabi, said that every day he came home from school and his mom would say, did you ask a good question?
Beautiful.
Not what did you learn? Isn't that great?
That's great.
So if we can teach our kids to ask questions, smart questions, not smart aleck questions necessarily.
That's a whole nother child we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
But yeah, it's the notion of I belong in this world. I have a role to play. And it's important that I'm thinking, I'm involved, I'm participating. And so helping children to learn how to ask those questions is essential. And we're not just talking about the early learning stages, kids who are learning the basics of language or who are entering school at 5 years of age, learning to read or, you know, honing their early reading skills. We're talking about children of every level, especially if you have not had an opportunity to be connected. Judaism can be very intimidating to people that may not know how to pray or what things mean in Hebrew, or they may not have had a connection or felt a comfort in their life. So there's a great opportunity for outreach on all kinds of levels with all kinds of kids.
You know, one thing that I like to try to explain to people in a variety of areas is that ignorance is not a sin, and ignorance
right.
is not a bad attitude.
We're all ignorant about something.
Got to learn, which is kind of what education's all about.
You got it.
Thanks, John. We will talk next week.
Shavuot Tov.
Shavuot Tov. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Jaime enters a Catholic church and heads for the confessional when the priest asks him, "Tell me why you've come, my son." Jaime answers, "Some son. I'm 93 years old. My wife, who was 91, died a year ago. We were happily married for 65 years. But last night I had crazy, joyous sex with that 27-year-old supermodel." The priest is aghast. "When was your last confession, old man?" Jaime replies, "Why would a Jewish man like me go to confession?" The priest is confused. If you're Jewish, why are you telling me this story? And Jaime replies, I'm telling everyone. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and tell everyone. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Emorah, which includes passages celebrating all the festivals of the Jewish year. Last week's portion of Kiddushim focused on the holiness of truly ethical conduct. In Emorah, we move to the ways that rituals create holiness in our lives by setting aside times and seasons for sacredness, and then dedicating them to God. In a conservative or Orthodox congregation, Emorah is one of the most frequently read Torah portions, chanted when it falls in the normal reading cycle, and then again on each of the festivals in turn. That is, we read Emorah this week, but also on each of the holy days it describes, from Sukkot in the fall to Passover in the spring to Shavuot in early summer. In most areas of our lives, the things that happen rarely are considered more important. Graduation days, wedding days, vacations, and so on. Paradoxically, in Jewish tradition, those rituals which are observed more frequently are considered to be superior in holiness to those which occur less frequently. The more you do something, the holier it is. That is, the things you do most frequently are considered most important, or should be. Your actions regularly should reflect your values. Which means that the process of remembering and celebrating the festivals, particularly the most frequent festival of all, the Sabbath, is especially important. And we can do that every week through Shabbat. It comes each Friday and Saturday. On this week of Parshat Emor, may you personally find a way to create this habit of holiness, the Sabbath, in your own life. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, U.S. Senator John McCain, will explain what he thinks about Donald Trump, immigration, and Israel. Find out when we return on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life, 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Our brothers, In a story that became public last week, the grandchildren of a German-Jewish lawmaker, Ludwig Marum, who was murdered in the Holocaust, are demanding the Israel Museum in Jerusalem hand over a historic Haggadah they say is rightfully theirs. The Israel Museum's Bird's Head Haggadah, the world's oldest illustrated Haggadah, was stolen from the family by the Nazis and sold without permission, eventually, to the Bezalel National Museum, the Israel Museum's predecessor. The family claims the museum's possession of the 14th century manuscript is a long-standing illegal and moral injustice. They are represented by E. Randall Schoenberg, a past guest of Too Jewish. Schoenberg is the attorney whose success restoring Gustav Klimt's masterpiece painting to its Jewish heir was depicted in the 2015 film The Woman in Gold. The family wants the famed Bird's Head Haggadah to remain at the Israel Museum where it's displayed, but it demands the museum pay compensation and rename the manuscript after the family. "We want a compromise," said Eli Barzilai, who is 75 years old, the leading figure in the effort on behalf of the cousins. Barzilai lives in Jerusalem. The other cousins live in the U.S. and Germany. The family is seeking less than $10 million. As Randy Schoenberg put it, "If we go to court," he said, "there's no turning back." The museum said in a statement it looks forward to meeting with Mr. Barzilai following several suggestions of ours that he do so and to learning about whatever new information and documentation he has and sharing what the museum knows with him. In an email exchange provided by Barzilai's attorney Schoenberg, the museum's lawyer acknowledged the family's ownership of the Haggadah for a period of time up until 1933. The family's been aware for decades that the Haggadah was at the Israel Museum. However, they did not act because they thought they had no recourse. After Barzilai heard a speech last year at the Israel Museum by Schoenberg, the lawyer who retrieved the Klimt paintings, he approached him about his family's case. The Bird's Head Haggadah is not the first Holocaust restitution case the Israel Museum has faced. The museum has in recent years returned 18 works looted during World War II by the Nazis, with three more in process. In other news, a previously unknown version of Elie Wiesel's masterpiece Night, one of the most influential Holocaust books ever written, has been discovered in his Boston library. This version in Hebrew is longer and takes a much harsher view of God's role in the Shoah. Wiesel, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate and past guest of Too Jewish, has been one of the most significant voices of the Jewish world for more than 50 years. But the wider public has not been able to read this particular work, which Wiesel wrote in the late 50s. Wiesel intended to turn it into a special, expanded Hebrew version of his bestseller Night, one of the most widely sold, read, translated, and quoted Holocaust works. But before completing the task, he decided to shelve it, putting it deep in his archive. Even poet and translator Chaim Guri, who translated Night from French to Hebrew, didn't know it existed. Dr. Joel Rappel, the historian Wiesel asked to catalog his papers, found the work recently. Wiesel has known Rappel for decades and in 2009 asked him to organize and manage the huge archive. It took him 7 years to accomplish the complex task of classification and organization. Rappel dedicated 2.5 of those years to detective work, finding Wiesel's lost Hebrew manuscript based on Night. Rappel's interest in the archived work was spurred after a document on display in the university library caught his eye. It was a photograph of a page in Hebrew in Wiesel's handwriting, whose content reminded him of Night. An alarm bell went off, Rappel recalls. Wiesel wrote Night in French, adapted from his original Yiddish, and Guri translated it to Hebrew. So I asked myself, what is another Hebrew version of this book doing here? When he posed the question to Elie Wiesel, the author answered, "There's something like that, but I don't know where it is. I'd be very happy if you could find it." Rappel realized he wouldn't be able to rest until he found the manuscript, but go find 100 pages among a million documents, he said. He combed through 500 pages a day looking for hints as to the location of the missing manuscript. After 2.5 years, one day he found a package of papers in Hebrew among other documents. He realized he'd found what he was looking for. For health reasons, Elie Wiesel can no longer be interviewed, but this harsher version of Night will now see the light of day. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We are delighted to welcome back our special guest this morning, Senator John McCain of Arizona. Senator, we started talking about the Middle East. We talked extensively about the relationship with Israel. Since the so-called Arab Spring and the transformation, we have seen all kinds of really disturbing and disruptive things taking place in the Middle East. Can you talk about what you see going on in Syria now and with ISIS?
I'm sorry to tell you that as far as ISIS is concerned, there is no strategy. We are practicing what I saw during the Vietnam War and what we called graduated escalation. It is now begrudging increases, 50 special forces here, 200 there, send some Apache helicopters. You don't win conflicts when you practice incrementalism. The president pulled everybody out of Iraq, and Lindsey Graham and I predicted exactly what would happen. We have made some progress. Meanwhile, ISIS has metastasized into places like Libya, parts of Africa, Afghanistan, and so we have made some gains geographically, but there will be, according to the Director of National Intelligence, who testified before the Armed Services Committee, there will be further attacks on the United States of America. Baghdadi is sending young men with secure apps into the flood of refugees with the plan to attack Europe and the United States. So all I can say is that we now have the ISIS threat, but we also now have the Russians establishing themselves in the Middle East, which they haven't been able to since Sadat threw them out of Egypt in 1973. They are now crushing the moderate opposition and not ISIS, and establishing themselves and keeping Bashar Assad in power, who has slaughtered now we estimate about 300,000 of his own citizens, and doing nothing about it. This is a failed, feckless foreign policy called leading from behind, and the president obviously did not know that when you create a vacuum, that vacuum is going to be filled, and it is this time filled with evil people. It'll take the next president years to repair the damage that this president has inflicted.
You know, Saudi Arabia finds itself in an interesting position. I have never before in reading Saudi newspapers seen anything positive about Israel. Now, for the first time, I'm sure, in history, we're seeing positive statements about Israel. Is there a realignment going on out of fear of Iran, fear of ISIS?
There's no doubt in my mind there is a realignment going on. And Israel's relationship with Egypt, which has been strong since the Camp David Accords, as you know, is getting better. But I see, thanks to a lot of things, including a failure of American leadership, an alignment between Israel and the Sunni Arab countries to prevent further aggression and success on the part of the Iranians. And yeah, we are seeing that realignment, and I would hope that if Erdogan had good sense, and there has been some improvements between Israel and Turkey, that we could see that alignment. There is an existential threat not only to Israel, but to the Sunni Arab countries as well. There's a common enemy, and I'm frankly very happy to see that new relationship. And by the way, on that subject, there are problems with the Saudis, individual Saudis that contributed to terrorist organizations, although there's never been any proof that the Saudi government did. But we also know where Osama bin Laden came from. But I also think that there is been some progress in Saudi Arabia, and I also believe that they are our natural ally, and we should work to continue to see improvement in human rights in Saudi Arabia, but we certainly shouldn't cut them loose. But just one brief story. The Saudis had planes on the runway ready to attack targets in Syria after the president had said that the Syrians had crossed a red line by using chemical weapons, and they found out on CNN that we indeed were not going to do that. That was a seminal moment. That's when the Saudis decided they had to act on their own. That's why they attacked Houthis, the Iranian-backed Houthis in Yemen, without even telling the United States of America what they were going to do. This is an incredible point in U.S. Sunni Arab country relationship, U.S. Israel relationship, and we are seeing, I think, a realignment with the Israeli Sunni Arab relationship.
You are a recent Republican nominee for president. This is the strangest election year I can recall. Your impressions, nobody's been right. Nobody a year ago was right about what was about to happen. What are your impressions from your unique and, you know, kind of extraordinary perspective?
I, like everybody else, was wrong in our predictions and expectations. Mr. Trump is tapped, as Bernie Sanders has, is tapped into a degree of dissatisfaction amongst the American people. I think there's a whole lot of reasons for it, but one of the main reasons is the very slow recovery from the 2008 financial crisis. Millions of Americans have stopped looking for work. Many of former blue-collar workers see no prospect of employment, thanks to automation and other shrinking of the economy and trends towards high technology industries and basis of our economy, and dissatisfaction with the lack of progress and gridlock in Washington. And there's many other reasons. I think some of it has to do with, very frankly, this fear of immigration, of illegal immigration. So we are now seeing the Sanders phenomena and the Trump phenomena. I think that partially thanks due to the way the Democrats rigged their process, that Hillary Clinton is probably on her way after last night. Certainly Donald Trump had great success. He's supposed to give a foreign policy speech, and we'll look forward to seeing what that policy speech is all about. Up till now, he has made statements like withdrawing from NATO, like removing the nuclear umbrella, like being neutral on the Palestinian-Israeli issue that, frankly, I cannot, not only cannot agree with, I violently disagree with.
You co-authored with another past guest of Two Jewish, Russ Feingold, the McCain-Feingold Campaign Reform Act. What do you think about the way campaign financing has gone since, in recent years?
I think it's terribly unfortunate. I think that there will be other scandals. We have a history in this country in this kind of electoral evolution, and that is that we have scandals, and then there's reform, and then there's periods of pauses, and then there's corruption, and then there's scandal, and then there's reform. I predict to you that there will be a major scandal because there's too much unaccounted for money washing around the political cycles, and that's what it's been. Teddy Roosevelt was one of our great reformers, and we reformed with McCain-Feingold, and we will reform again. But unfortunately, there will be major scandals, I'm sorry to say, like the Abramoff scandal, and then we will reform. In the meantime, unaccounted for money is having an impact on our elections, and at least the American people should know the source of that money that are now playing a major role in our elections.
Immigration reform has been an important point. You mentioned it earlier. Where do you feel we should be on immigration reform? Because certainly we haven't seen the kinds of progress that we would have liked to have seen.
Well, we've got 11 million people who are in this country illegally, and I do not believe that there's a possibility, as Mr. Trump has advocated, that we deport them all. In fact, I believe that there are many of them who I think we should provide a path to citizenship for. That has to come with border security, which we can do through technology. That has to come with a e-verify system where anyone looking for a job has to have a document that shows they are in the country legally. And if an employer hires someone without that, that employer needs to be prosecuted. That will dry up this magnet because if people realize that if they come to this country illegally, then they can't get a job. 99% of them won't come here. So it has to be a comprehensive approach. And those who are opposed to that proposal, as I outlined, my question has always been, well, what is your proposal? Obviously, no one that I know believes that it's practical to deport 11 million people. So I hope that we can continue to discuss this issue. It's not healthy for people to live in the shadows of our country, and I would hope that we could address the issue. And if someone has a better proposal, I would be more than happy to hear it. And it does have to do, we must have border security, and I do believe we have developed technology, particularly during the Iraq conflict, where we are able to surveil and thereby interdict. That's what the Israelis do with their border. I've been to the blockhouses where there are young women, and by the way, they found that young women do a better job than young men.
They have a better attention span, I think the Israelis have discovered.
I think that's exactly right from what I've been told. But anyway, they are watching these screens. If someone tries to penetrate their border, they send out a team and intercept them. That's the kind of process that we need as well.
One final question, Senator McCain. You've run for president. You've been a leader in the Senate for so long. What goals would you have for your next term as senator?
Well, as chairman of the Armed Services Committee, as I mentioned to you earlier in our conversation, according to the Director of National Intelligence and anyone you want to listen to, the world is in more crises than any time since the end of World War II. We have more refugees than any time since the end of World War II. As chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee and my many years of involvement in national security issues, I want to work with the next president of the United States to make this world safe. I promise you that there will be further attempts at attacks on the United States of America. Whether they succeed or not depends on our ability to early detect and to foil them. But there is a great danger to the United States of America, whether it's the Iranians and their activities, or whether it be ISIS, or whether it be these homegrown jihadists who are indoctrinated over the internet, and also Russia is more aggressive and more pugnacious than it's been since the end of the Cold War. The Chinese are building up these islands and are asserting their influence and eventual taking the South China Sea as part of their territory. And so I need to work to keep this nation safe and help the men and women who are serving so bravely in their ability to defend it. That's what my primary mission is.
I want to thank Senator John McCain for a great visit here on Too Jewish. You can find out more about him, pretty much anywhere, but if you want to go to the website, johnmccain.com, there's plenty there.
Senator, Rabbi, could I just make one more comment?
Of course.
I have been to Israel more times than I can tell you. I am committed to the preservation of the State of Israel. I will do anything that I can to be of assistance to it. I am proud of my record in defense of the State of Israel. And primarily that has to do with the fact that it is the only freely elected democratic government in all of the Middle East. It is a place of importance in more ways than I can describe, and I am very proud and will continue my work on behalf of the defense of the State of Israel, which I believe, thanks to this growing strength of Iran, is probably in more danger in some respects, not in all, but in some respects, than it's been in a long, long time.
Senator, thank you so much. We appreciate that. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Jeff Ader, founder of the Jewish Baseball Museum. Our playout this morning comes from the poems of Natan Yonatan. This one's called Milim Megushamot, sung by Chani Dinor. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
שנים אני טורחת בקשתות גוררת אבני מילין שומטת וקמה לבנות ושבה ומתמוטטת כל ארכיטקט מצוי היה מזמן בונה כאן גשר בלימות אבל אצלי מגושמות בקושי מקימות גשר צר מאוד.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.